My guest at this time is Diana Furchtgott-Roth. She is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. She is also a contributing editor at RealClearMarkets.com. She's a former chief economist for the Department of Labor. She is also the author of a recent opinion piece that appeared in the Washington Examiner and the San Francisco Examiner, contending that the president's health care policy actually discourages marriage and work. And Diana, thanks so much for being with us.
It's great to be with you, Greg.
Let's just get right to it. The president probably wouldn't contend that his program does that, but you've crunched the numbers. How exactly does this new health care plan discourage marriage, first of all?
Well, I'm sure if the president looked at the numbers, he would absolutely agree. There are two ways it discourages marriage. First of all, because people are helped up to the poverty line. So for one person, 100% of the poverty line is about $11,000. But for two people, it's about 100% of the poverty line is $15,000. Tax subsidies are greater for people at the lower end of the poverty line, and they phase out completely at 400% of the poverty line. So one person making $40,000 a year would qualify for government help with his insurance premiums. Another, say a lady making $40,000 a year, would also qualify for help with her premiums. But if they both got married, they would be above 400% of the poverty line, and so they wouldn't qualify. So that's the first reason that it discourages marriage. And health insurance premium is going to be a lot more expensive because what's been put in place with Obamacare is a very generous package with no co-payments for routine care, unlimited lifetime coverage, no maximum, the requirement that insurance companies take anyone who is sick at any time. So if you don't have health insurance and you choose to pay the penalty and then you sign up when you're sick, the company has to take you. So that's one major reason that it discourages marriage. And that's been talked about before. There's another reason it discourages marriage, which has not received quite as much press. And that is, if one member of a family gets affordable coverage from his employer, single coverage from the employer, not family coverage. And by the way, the employer is only required to provide affordable single coverage. They are not required to provide affordable family coverage. And the government in the bill defines what affordable means. So if one person gets affordable coverage, the other members of the family cannot get help with their premiums on the state exchanges. They cannot go on to the state exchanges and get subsidized health care. So if you're earning maybe $25,000 a year and you have a family of four and your employer gives you health coverage for yourself at affordable rates, you have to take it. And that means that the rest of your family is in a no man's land. They can't necessarily get affordable coverage through your employer, and they can't go on the exchange to get subsidized coverage there. So they're faced with either paying full price, which again is very expensive, the health insurance premiums, or if they were to get divorced, then the wife and children could get subsidized coverage on the exchange. So that's the second marriage penalty. And President Obama would understand both of those because he went to Harvard Law School, and he's a very, very intelligent man. The problem is his advisors probably haven't explained it to him properly.
Diana, is there any explanation in the bill for that no man's land that you mentioned, what they expect to happen if you don't get family coverage offered at an affordable rate by your employer?
No, there's no mention in the bill. It started out in the summer of 2009 with affordable coverage having to be affordable family coverage. So if you were married and had a family, the health insurance premium that your employer provided had to be affordable family coverage. And then somewhere in the fall, as they were going through different iterations of the bill, the family coverage got switched to single coverage. But it was hardly mentioned at all. Many people didn't even notice it. And there's no mention made as to what is going to happen to the families of individuals who get single coverage. But what is known is they are barred from getting subsidized coverage on the health exchanges.
Diana, the other issue we mentioned, and that probably ties in a little bit with what we've already discussed, and that is the contention you make that the law also provides a disincentive to work. Explain how that happens.
Because in the first case I gave, where there are two individuals who earn $40,000 each a year, but combined their income is too high to allow them to get financial help with their premiums, if they both worked, if one of them dropped out of the labor force, and so the combined income of the couple was $40,000 a year, then they would be eligible to receive these subsidies.
But if you were to, say, have two people working, obviously, the amount of additional income, would that offset the financial assistance you'd get from the government?
Well, in some cases, yes, and in some cases, no. So I've just drawn a clear case where there are two people earning $40,000 each. So in that case, it probably would make sense for most for them to continue to work and not get the subsidized help. But say one of them is making $70,000, another is making $20,000, which might just take them over the limit, then in that case, the one who is making less might find it worthwhile dropping out of the labor force. There are certainly cases, especially with women who go in and out of the labor force as they have children. Their children go off to school. They might want to start working again at a part-time job. They might find it just doesn't make sense to go back to work.
Let me get back to another point that we've already talked about quite a bit, and that's this idea that it's possible that as we get closer and closer and implement more and more of this bill, that only single-person health insurance rather than providing for the family will be available. Even if both parents work, if that becomes a larger and larger trend, how do the kids get covered?
The kids might get covered under the Children's Health Insurance Program, or it might be possible, and this is what Professor Richard Burkhauser of Cornell University has pointed out, that families will choose to work for employers who do not provide health insurance. Because if they worked for an employer that did not provide health insurance to low-income people, then they would be able to go to the state exchanges and get subsidized coverage from those exchanges. So you might find that there are more people on the exchanges than had previously been thought by the Congressional Budget Office, leading to a larger cost for this plan.
Diana, is there any effort to repeal or reform this particular aspect of the law?
The House Republicans are trying to repeal the entire law.
Right.
So far, they have repealed it. They passed a bill to repeal the entire law. But so far, there's been no effort in the Senate either to repeal it or to fix it. There are a number of obvious fixes for this bill that could be made, or it could be repealed, and we could move from there to see how to cover those uninsured Americans who need coverage. But so far, not enough efforts are being made.
Diana, certainly troubling based on the research you've done. Thank you very much for bringing it to our attention today.
It's great to be with you, Greg. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about this with your listeners.
Oh, as always. Diana Furchtscott-Roth is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. She's a contributing editor for RealClearMarkets.com. She is a former chief economist for the Department of Labor and has written on the subject we've just been discussing recently for the Washington Examiner and the San Francisco Examiner. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.